Sort of unconventional detector, and maybe many of you don't know about DAMIC. DAMIC is dark matter in CCD, and DAMIC 1K is next stage of this experiment, which is currently running at Snow Lab. And the principle is already here. So what you see here, this is an image, actually, from one of our CCDs at ground level. And you see we measure ionization induced by particles to a very exquisite, with a very exquisite spatial resolution. So I just wanted to briefly remind you how a CCD works. These are detectors that you can find in fancy cameras. Each pixel of a CCD is essentially a capacitor, a MOS capacitor. So you produce, generate electron hole pairs, and you have a voltage there. So you bring them up. Here you have an insulator, a silicon oxide. So they're stacked there. The charge is stacked there. And then what you do, in order to read out the charge, you move the charge across the array by changing the voltage potential corresponding to the pixel. So like that, you stretch the charge, and you move the charge from row to row till you get to what we call the serial register, where you have other clocks that move the charge to your charged voltage amplifier. So it's a serial detector where you read it in a serial way. And this is an example of what you see if you put an oscilloscope at the output of the amplifier. And you see this sort of structure here. And it's a bit technical, but it will be important to understand the noise, as we will show later. And so basically, in order to kill the noise as much as possible, you use standard method called correlated Dipole sampling. Because what happens is you put some charge, then you need to take it out to put the charge of the next pixel. And when you do that, you apply a reset pulse. And the reset pulse by itself introduces some charge, which change each time you do a reset. And so in order to eliminate that additional noise introduced by the reset, what you do, you measure before moving the charge. So that's a sort of pedestal, if you want. Then you move the charge. This little bump here is we are moving the charge in. And then you measure the signal plus the charge that you have here. And then you make the difference. And in the difference, you cancel this reset charge. So this is widely used in all CCD readouts. So this is DAMIC at Snow Lab, the one that we are running now. So this is one of our detectors, 16 megapixel CCD, 6 cm by 6 cm, with a packaging which is low background. Each of these is about 6 grams. And then we place several of them in a copper box, like in drawers, one on top of each other. Here's the copper box. On top of it, there is a lead block that we use to screen from some vacuum electronics. And then you slide this column inside a vacuum vessel. And you put around some lead for photons, to screen from photons, and polyethylene around for the neutrons. And this is the setup we have been working with for now a few years as normal, about 3 years. So a few points I want to make. It seems funny that we use such thin detectors, but after all, thanks to this design by Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, which are high resistivity thick CCDs, the thickness we have is a world record, it's almost a millimeter now. We can put a reasonable mass, so if with some tens, 10 of this detector, you can make already an order of 100 gram detector. That is what we are running at Snow Lab. And why we are interested in this detector? Because you can have a very low energy threshold. I mean, one very important point is that we have achieved dark current or leakage current in a detector which is extremely small. We cool the CCD at 120 Kelvin. So these are not millikelvin. It's very easy to manage a detector of this kind. And there, the dark current that we see is less than 10 to the minus 3 electron per pixel per day. So basically, you have zero electrons. So the dark current itself, the fluctuation from the dark current, doesn't give us noise at the level we are now. We are dominated by this noise in the amplifier that I showed before, the so-called readout noise. And in the system that we are running now, we have achieved a readout noise of about 2 electrons. And I mean, this is to give you the scale. So an electron hole pair, in order to produce electron hole pair in silicon, you need 3.8 electron volts. The band gap is 1.1, 1.2. So that's an example, you know, one image taken out as no lab. It's all dark, it's all noise, essentially. And then you make a distribution. It's a perfect Gaussian with 1.8. A specific thing that of this detector is that since we are dominated by the readout noise, you want to minimize the number of exposures because you want to minimize the number of pixels that you have in the Gaussian. So once you place a threshold, if you have a lot of pixels at a certain point, something will go above the threshold. So in this mode where we are dominated by the readout noise, what we do, we have a long exposure, 8 hours, and then we read out the charge, okay? because in this way, you know, ideally you could keep the detector running for 1 year and take only one exposure. Obviously, we are not going to do that.
How long is the exposure in your Gaussian? Well, just curious. That was an 8 hour?
Yeah, that's 8 hour exposure, yes.
So it's great.
Yes, yes, yes. So the other unique point is the spatial resolution. And I want to show this through an event. This is at ground level. This is a muon piercing through the CCD. And you see, here is thin, and here is thick. So why is that? It's because here you are at the top of the CCD, so it means the muon is coming, is very close to the pixel, and here the muon is exiting from the pixel. So energy deposit has been deposited through the CCD, and while the charge diffuses towards the pixel, while charge moves towards the pixel, it diffuses, and so it becomes bigger. And actually, you can measure the sigma here and the sigma here, or the sigma across all this line, because you have the complete geometry, you know the thickness, you know where it enters and where it exits. And you see that the sigma, the spatial sigma, is essentially linear with respect to the depth. So in this way, from the dimension of the cluster that we see, we can actually know to a certain level where the energy deposit actually happened within the CCD. And this helps us in, for example, doing 3D position reconstruction, which means fiducial volume definition and surface event rejection. Again, it's very funny. We do something like, you know, big liquid detectors, but over 675 microns. And the other is particle ID. This is an example of collection of things that we see. These are real data. So these are muon, minimum ionizing particle. You see whorls. You call them whorls. These are low-energy electrons struggling in silicon. Alphas are very distinctive. These are huge, round blobs with a lot of charge. And then this is our signal. These are little energy deposits, sort of round thing, diffusion limited. And I will show that, you know, thanks to the spatial resolution, we have a really unique handling to understand our backgrounds. That's an example. I will show a few, one plot for essentially a few papers that we have published in the last 2 years. 2-3 years. This is how we understand our background, radiogenic background. So look at that. This is an alpha. You know, these are three alphas, okay? The typical shape of alphas. And in three different images separated by 18 days here and, you know, 6 hours here. If you look at the scale, they actually happen in exactly the same location. So what you're looking here is a single nucleus which is undergoing a series of decay along the decay chain. And, you know, we see these sort of things. We see even beta, beta, alpha, and this sort of thing. So we have a really extreme understanding of what kind of background we have in the surface and in our detector. This is not a monster. It's an alpha and a beta decay. And you can see that this is a beta coming from here, because here you see the Bragg peak, where at the end you have a lot of energy deposited. Okay. And so we used this in a very powerful way to measure actually the uranium-thorium level, put limits at the PPT level of our silicon detectors. Calibration has been mentioned several times, and we indeed have been, I think, the first to do this measure, the first and the only, to measure nuclear recoils down to 60 electron volt in EE using a photoneutron source. You take an antimony rod, you bring it to a nuclear reactor, you activate it, and then you get monochromatic photons, you put beryllium around, And essentially you are at the threshold of photoneutrons, and so you produce very low energy neutrons, which are the ones required in order to explore, you know, a spectrum which goes down to sub-KV. And indeed, we have been able to measure, you know, the quenching factor of the nuclear recoil ionization efficiency to sub-KV level for the first time, actually showing that there is a difference, let's say, a deviation from the so-called Lindar theory for the expert here. There was a question on this. I think Rafael mentioned this today. So we have actually, there is a paper out, I mean, 1 month ago, I think, 4 weeks ago. We have also measured the fundamental background that we are now, gamma rays, Compton-induced single electron gamma rays in our detector. This is what you see if you expose a CCD to a cobalt 57 source, so you see your classical photoelectric absorption lines, the Compton edge. And then if you look at the very low energy, where you know you want actually to put your limits, this is not flat, but you have actually, you know, we are sensitive to the silicon K and L shell. And this is important when you have to parameterize your background in order to put the limit. And essentially, so far, people were sort of assuming that this was flat. And we have the sensitivity to do this sort of beautiful measurements. Say it again?
Decrease that you have at lower
energies. No, it's due to the L... to the L line, yes. This is just a plot summarizer limit that we did with a very small exposure during our R&D phase. This was not to place the best limit. It was to put us on the map and show that we can use this detector to actually do dark matter searches. And what you do, you look at, you search for clusters on your image, and then you can measure the energy and sigma xy, and sigma xy is proportional to z, and then you can make a plot of sigma xy versus energy. These gray bands are surface background, simulated surface background, so you can apply a fiducial volume, look at the spectrum. We didn't expect to see anything, but it was a demonstration of all the tools that are required in order to make a measurement there. And that was also published last year. So recently, we did a study. I mean, we placed some limit on hidden photon dark matter by using the fact that we have an incredibly low leakage current. I mean, the best leakage capture ever achieved in a silicon detector. And essentially, let's look at this directly. I mean, if you have an interaction of a hidden photon with mass MV, this will produce a certain number of charge carriers in the silicon. And so if you look at the pixel deposition, okay, the energy deposition in the pixel that was a perfect Gaussian, what you expect is to see some bumps appearing. In principle, if you have a sub-electron resolution, you would see here, you know, a 0, 1, 2, etc. Okay, we don't have it yet. I will show that this is next step of the experiment. But you know, doing this sort of analysis, we have been able to place sort of the best experimental limit in this region, which goes towards the 1 eV. But I mean, the main point here is that this is possible only because you have a detector which has an incredibly low leakage current, 10 to the minus 21 ampere per centimeter square, which has not been achieved as far as I know by any other detector. So this is where we are now. We are at the level with, you know, the radioactive background is similar to other experiments in the field. We have a low noise, 2 electron multiplied by 5 sigma is 10 electron. We have installed several of these CCDs at the beginning of the year, and we hope to get, I mean, we should get on the order of 10 kilogram day of data in, you know, end of this year and in 2018. So next step is dummy 1K, and we want to build a kilogram size experiment with 0.1 DRU background and a threshold which is less equal to 2 electrons. So this, you see, is a big improvement with what we have achieved. And a detector with these characteristics will certainly have a huge impact, you know, in searches of dark matter on a broader way. So I want to show you what you can do, I mean, with this sort of assumption, 2-electron threshold at 0.1 DRU. So you would carve, you know, a significant part of the parameter rates. So you see that we are not, and we cannot reach crest. Crest is dominant and will dominate in that area because they measure phonons, so they can go much lower. But we can explore by many order of magnitudes in one go all the dark matter electron models. So recently, you know, several of you were there, I guess, was a workshop in Maryland. Now there is in the archive a white paper on that. And so this is an example of what we can do with dummy 1K. This is another example in a, you know, cross-section of the dark electron versus the mass of dark matter. And here I would like to point out that dummy 1K will have a sensitivity similar to the best accelerator experiment, which is on the market.
I just have to interject right here. That plot is wrong.
Is wrong?
The plot is wrong because there was a mistake in translating the LVMX curve from the dark sectors report onto this plane. This was something that I brought up with Javier Tiffin.
Yeah.
They corrected it, but that is an absolutely absolute plot.
Okay. So you will tell me which plot it is.
I'll show you the plot.
Okay, that's good. Is it still compatible? Or?
So the LVMX curve moves.
Yes, okay, a little bit. Okay, but in any case, we are similar sensitivity. That's the message I want to say. And this is something that you need because, you know, an accelerator will demonstrate and win a Nobel Prize because they find a new particle. They cannot demonstrate that it's dark matter. In order to demonstrate it's dark matter, you need a direct detection of dark matter. So to have something of similar sensitivity is, I think, very important. So there are challenges, obviously, to do that. I mean, to build it is not a big, is not a problem. I mean, this, what you see here is the silicon wafer where we have produced our 4K by 4K CCDs. And basically, we have to increase the size of the CCD to 6K by 6K. This is not the largest CCD ever built. There are, you know, bigger CCD in the market. And make them a little bit thicker, 1 millimeter, then you get 20 gram per CCD, and you need 50 CCDs to get a kilogram. And 50 CCD, you know, they are now routinely operated in telescopes, so it's not a problem. And we actually know, we have now quotes for the production of the CCD themselves. So background is a huge issue, obviously. We want to drop it from few DRU to a fraction of DRU. And there is work that needs to be done there. But we are confident from our studies that by improving the design using, you know, electroform copper, non-standard copper, having strict procedure in the way, you know, we use silicon, we do storage the silicon and the material, radon free air, avoiding surface contamination, that we can achieve that kind of level. I mean, other experiments are claiming sort of 0.1 DRU in external background, you know, next generation experiment like super CDMS. So there is no reason why we cannot reach that level. I want to, so this is you know, a vessel that PNNL, which are now collaborators of the experiment, are growing. So I want to spend a few minutes on these, on internal backgrounds, because I think this is what, at the end, will limit any experiments. And so this is crucial if you want to go to next generation. And in silicon, there are two. Cosmogenic silicon 32, so this is something that cosmic rays, neutrons interacting with argon in the atmosphere, produce silicon 32, which is radioactive. Then you have rain that brings it down. It mixes up with the silicon sand. And so whenever you make a detector, this stuff is in there, okay? And there is no way to take it out, it's silicon. And so the way we have approached this is that we actually use our spatial resolution to measure it. This is the first measurement of this kind of background. And so this is a candidate event, because what you have a sequence of two beta decays, okay? And so you see first a beta decay, and this is a candidate. After 35 days, you see another beta coming from exactly the same point. And by analyzing this data, we have been able actually to do the first measurement. And you know, if we are able to measure it, we can also reject it, okay? Because we can see for this correlation, and then reject pairs which have these characteristics. This is about one DRU, and this is actually the dominant background in super CDMS. And so we can definitely go down by a factor, you know, of several tens or 100 in that. What about tritium? So tritium is produced by cosmic ray interaction in the silicon itself. So it's a result of spallation interaction. And there, what you need to do is to, you know, shield your detector as much as possible, avoid that is exposed to, you know, to the neutrons, to the cosmic ray flux. And we will implement, you know, the same kind of procedures that experiments like Majorana and Gerda for germanium have used to move around the detectors in an iron shipping container, which reduce the flux by a factor 20. So overall, the exposure will be very small. Another thing is that we may be actually be able to measure this component of the background. This has never been measured. There are all, let's say, estimates from calculation and simulation. And we believe that we will have enough sensitivity with the current detector to actually measure the background. And so we will be able to input this in the design of the new detector. The last ingredient is the subelectron noise. How are we going to do that? I mean, it's implementing a different way of doing the readout in the CCD, which is very clever. So it's a non-destructive measurement of the charge. So if you remember what I said before, what you do, you move the charge in the amplifier, okay? You measure a voltage, and then you throw the charge. In the skipper readout, you move the charge under a floating gate, which goes up, you measure a voltage, but then you bring back the charge, the same charge, and then you repeat the measurement. So you don't destroy the charge, but you measure it many times, okay? What do you gain by doing that? You gain that you do it fast, and you see, this is what I sketched you before. No? So you measure a pedestal, you measure a signal. If you have high frequency noise, it's not a problem. You integrate over the high frequency noise, and okay, that goes away, and then you have only the white noise. If you have a low frequency noise here, that you cannot avoid. And so, in fact, we are dominated at the moment in the current readout by low frequency noise. This you cannot cancel. However, if you measure the charge many times and you know, very rapidly, basically your component of 1/f noise becomes very small. And so in this way, you are killing the 1/f noise, and then you do a 1/√(n) for the white noise. And there has been a wonderful R&D done at Fermilab by Javier Tiefenberg, which shows unprecedented sensitivity through the skipper readout. What you see here is a plot of the pixel charge, the same plot where you saw a Gaussian with, you know, a sigma of 2. Now you have 0, 1, 2, and the sigma here is of the order of 6%. So it's clear that you can place a cut at the level of, you know, 1 or 2 electrons very easily in this way. This is also beautiful. You see that at the level of 15,000 electrons, you still count one after the other, you know, if you are adding one electron or not. So it's an incredible resolution. And the single electron resolution and the low leakage current is what is essential to really make this enormous improvement in the dark matter electron scattering. So I want to conclude with a couple of thoughts, since we are in a workshop and I want to sort of stimulate or inject some ideas. So what about the future? So is this something, you know, how to reach the neutrino floor? And I think that, I mean, yes, you can improve the external background, but at a certain point is the internal background, which will limit the improvement. And so in super CDMS is silicon 32. In DAMI 1K, the one that we're proposing, it's tritium. And what can we do with tritium? Well, There is the possibility that there is out diffusion of tritium in millimeter thick silicon when you bake it. So there are measurements of this effect done in, you know, in very early times and also later on. And so very likely when we make the CCDs, all the tritium is gone because we reach very high temperature in the fabrication process. Then we ship the silicon wafers out of the fabric. And you know, the idea is that we could transport them in a shielded container underground, and then you do a final baking underground, where even that little piece, that little part, is thrown out, is out diffused by baking the detector. And so actually, this is something, it's not just an idea, we are starting to work in collaboration with PNNL to make some real measurement of the out diffusion and the how much we can do. The advantage is having thin detector. If you put a big thick detector, this most probably will not work. So this is a specific advantage of the dynamic approach. So the other is spatial resolution. So what we have with respect to other detectors, we have this incredible spatial resolution and also the segmentation of the detectors. So for example, you see, this is something that we see. This is you expose your detector to iron 55 source. You get this 5.9 kV line. And actually, this is, you know, comes from two pieces here, which are separated. So the X-rays coming out and measure independently on from this one. So what does it mean? That in principle, we can, with this spatial resolution, look at excited states of dark matter, of the interaction, or whatever it is, that other people cannot. And this is a wave of actually cutting background, in a sense, because it's a very distinctive feature having two separate energy deposits in such a way. The probability this to happen is very, very small once you go in a low in a low energy background. In principle, we can do also 3D reconstruction, because given the size of the cluster, we know in Z where this happened. We have XY, so we could even look at the direction between these two clusters. Another thing would be that, you know, you have dark matter interaction, and then you get photons out of this process. I'm not discussing how. And our CCDs are highly sensitive to single photons. You know, these are basically developed to measure with high efficiency infrared photons for telescopes, and so visible or X-rays. And again, you could imagine of doing things of measuring, you know, two deposits independently, and have an idea if there is any correlation with directionality. Some of these ideas, I mean, I think is a result already of this workshop, because I've been discussing this with Chris and Joseph. So this is already, from my point of view, personal point of view, a success of participating to the workshop. So these are my conclusions. I hope that you have learned about this experiment now. We've been working during the last 3 years to demonstrate that it's a novel and conventional technique, but is unique for its spatial resolution, single electrode resolution, and extremely low leakage current. So we have to make use of these specific properties. We are taking data, and we know that the main result that we expect is a precise measurement of the background for next generation detector and put some limits. And we are working on DAMIC 1K now. The collaboration is getting bigger. Funding, we are applying for funding, and things are moving in that direction. And we think we will be a player together with others in the field in the next 5 to 10 years. One thing I want to mention is that to build DAMIC 1K is not, we are not starting from scratch. It's essentially an incremental step of proven technology. So I'm really confident that it will work as we specify. And I hope the last couple of slides may drive some interest to the theoretical community to think what can be done with a detector which has these unique properties. Thank you.
This seems like a great detector for what we talked about earlier, putting it on a balloon, measuring a high cross
section. So I am looking to that.
It's perfect for your interest with the cosmic rays.
Yes. So I'm looking into that. You know, at Chicago, we have a long tradition in balloons. So there are colleagues that have exactly that expertise. So that's something that we are looking into.
And I made some estimates. It looks like you can cover a huge parameter.
I know, yes. So we may talk about that later. But there is we are moving in that direction.
And it sounds like you don't have to have all the cryogenics.
No, you need a little, there are detectors that fly up there with huge superconducting magnets. What we need is a small liquid nitrogen supply, and so it's feasible. We don't have problems with microphonics because of the kind of detector, so it's relatively easy. It's not as complicated as putting in space technology like this. As a matter of fact, CCDs are regularly flown up there for measuring X-rays in satellites. So there is a long knowledge on how to do this problem.
There are a lot of claimed limits in the cross-section mass region, but mostly from detectors from the 70s and 80s that were intended for other purposes. So they,
they were not dedicated for doing this, right? So you can make a huge improvement if you think about a dedicated detector. Yeah, I'm aware, and I'm happy to hear feedback on that too, but we are thinking about this.
Is your main source of tritium from chromogenic activation or from absorption of water?
Say it again.
Your tritium source, is it cosmogenic or absorption of water?
I think it's cosmogenic because absorption of water is, during the processing, there is no water around. And then.
But it's in the atmosphere. And I know there are people who have suffered from this absorption of water from the atmosphere introducing tritium into their.
Yeah, but once you make the CCDs, then all the process, they are kept in dry gas, and dry nitrogen or argon. So there shouldn't also to take, to keep away the radon. So once they are produced, there is, in principle, no way you can get stuff down there. Or at least if there is, it will be a minimal amount. With respect to keeping the detector in a normal environment, like in other cases.
But I think, I don't want to contradict my boss, but I think we should look into this. Because
we should, yes.
It is true, though, that I think they're actually kept. They're ESD sensitive devices. They're probably kept with some humidity. Right. We can check it, but we should see what process. As Paulo said, right after they're baked, hopefully we can see there's very little tritium. And then it's a matter of a procedure after the wafers come out, where to keep them before we install them. So I think it's a good thing. We haven't thought about it before.
All right, so at this point, let's thank Paulo.